Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
From the second half of 2023 through the second quarter of 2024, our investors have been in sectors 2 and 3 of the inflation, deflation, and economic cycle portfolio, where the rate of change of the rate of change of inflation and growth is decelerating, that is sector 2, or is static, also known as sector 3. Bond and bond proxies tend to perform best in such an environment. Think about gold, treasuries, short-term treasuries, as it was in this case, utilities, etc. But recently, the IDEC model displayed a change. The second derivative of inflation and growth began to accelerate in September. This is known as Sector 4 in the IDEC portfolio. It must be noted this is merely a slight acceleration in growth and inflation. It is not runaway inflation or stagflation yet, and it's not at all runaway growth. But those who believe the economy is robust, for those who still believe that, witness today's ISM services sector report for November that came in at 52.1. That is an economy that's growing. Services sector is the largest component of the economy, but it's actually growing slower than it was in October. It was 56 in October, now 52.1. New orders fell by 3.7 points, and inflation did tick up 1/10 to a strong 58.2. So inflation is still a big problem, and it's slightly accelerating. In this situation, long-duration bonds are a sell. They've been a sell for a long time. Most precious metals are, they're not a sell. I wouldn't short them, but I wouldn't be buying them either at this moment. And bond proxies are also not the best place to be. Growth, momentum, higher beta, and cyclicals tend to outperform when the economy is growing on the second derivative basis in inflation and in growth. The two key conditions of inflation and growth continue to increase after the election, which promises to be a seamless transition of power, as opposed to a long, drawn-out, contested result where civil unrest reigned. Didn't happen. The election of Donald John Trump also presages lower taxes, reduced regulations, and the elimination of a great deal of waste in Washington, D.C. This is the function that Wall Street is concentrating on right now. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. Doesn't mean it's going to last very long. But that is the concentration right now. However, the potential deportation of millions of illegal immigrants, which would attenuate labor force growth and put upward pressure on prices, and the promise, coupled with the promise of tariffs, which could lead to higher consumer prices, temporarily at least, is being ignored at this moment by Wall Street. It would be a one-time leap in prices. Not inflation, just an increase in the consumer price index on a one-time basis. Tariffs and deportations could also derail the Fed from its current rate-cutting pace. Therefore, while my short-term outlook remains bullish, it's been bullish for a long time, even though the construction of the economy is extremely dangerous, the construction of markets, extremely dangerous. But I have learned, for the sake of my portfolio and my clients' portfolios, to be comfortable with cognitive dissonance. I understand things are going to crash. I understand how unstable the market and economy are. But my charge here is to try to make as much money as carefully as I possibly can while the environment remains conducive to do that. So while my short-term outlook remains bullish, the longer-term outlook is bearish and even becoming more bearish and should be completely disastrous for the 60-40 set-it-forget-it portfolio over time. First off, in order to believe in the soft landing narrative, you have to ignore some historically critical metrics that point to a recession. Recession is still coming, in my opinion. I've never backed down from that. It's the timing that I'm concerned with. I mean, the yield curve was inverted for the longest duration in history, and it was the second deepest inversion on record. This metric has never failed to predict either a recession or a plunge in GDP growth. The index of leading economic indicators continues to point to softer GDP growth. The rise in the unemployment rate and the rise in business and personal loan delinquencies and defaults is problematic to the soft landing view. The copper to gold ratio is falling, and this conveys an environment of weaker growth. Adding to this data is the fact that a debt-disabled economy is just very difficult to grow. Not only is the nation insolvent, but corporate America is sitting on a humongous credit bubble. Business debt more than doubled. It's more than doubled since the global financial crisis. $10.4 trillion to $21.4 trillion. It's now at a record 74% of GDP. In this context, we have a massive and unprecedented equity bubble. If you look at price to sales, negative risk premiums, total market cap of equities to GDP, the stocks are the most expensive ever. And to these bubbles, you must include the real estate bubble, both commercial and residential. A record high home price to income ratio, along with absolutely unaffordable insurance and tax rates, has caused the real estate transaction market to become dysfunctional. It's frozen. Doesn't work. The salient danger here is a revolt in the credit markets. I've been warning about it for a long time, and it's coming. This is made worse by the fact that the Fed believes inflation is under control and continues to cut interest rates. This has little to do with quiescence in inflation and much more to do with the fact that the U.S. is currently paying 20% of all revenue on interest payments, which is quickly rising to 30% if the Fed isn't able to cut short-term rates soon and significantly, which they're not going to be able to do. The national debt is 720% of revenue, and the deficit is growing at a pace that is equal to 44% of all revenue. It's not the debt to GDP. I mean, we're talking about the national debt to GDP. GDP includes what the consumers are producing, what businesses are producing. The GDP is irrelevant. It's what the revenue derived from the GDP can produce, unless you want to talk about the federal government selling, you know, Yellowstone National Park. I mean, we're not going to be able to address the deficit with anything more than revenue. You raise taxes too much, your revenue goes down. You cut them too much, your revenue goes down. So we're at 72% of revenue, and the deficit is growing at a pace that is 44% of revenue. So, you know, we're an insolvent nation, the debt situation is unsustainable already, and we're adding to the debt every year 44% of our entire revenue. That is a disaster. And it's supposed to be, you know, this is supposed to be great times. Very low historical unemployment rate, and we're not in a recession. Those metrics will go through the roof. They will explode exponentially when the automatic stabilizers kick in and the revenue to the nation plunges. And that is why the Fed is going to be forced to print trillions upon trillions of new credit to buy bonds and place them in cold storage on its balance sheet in the future after the next recession. In other words, out of the realm of public price discovery, which could and should lead to intractable stagflation and soaring bond yields on the long end of the yield curve. Now, I want to address what I addressed in some recent interviews, if you haven't seen them, why I believe Donald Trump is not going to fix everything. So I'm going to compare him briefly to Ronald Reagan, who, like Trump, delivered very substantial tax cuts, was the king of deregulations, and he did so without tariffs and without deportations. Trump 2.0 is not going to be Ronald Reagan's third term in office. So let's look at total non-financial debt as a percentage of GDP. What Donald Trump faces today is $75.3 trillion of non-financial debt. That's public and private debt outside the banking system. All of it, state, local, federal, corporate, business, everything, personal, household. $75.3 trillion. That's 260% of GDP. That's a record, by the way. Ronald Reagan had 4.2 trillion, not 75.3. And that metric, as percentage of the economy, was 132%. 132% of GDP, not 260%. Much easier to grow an economy that's not encumbered by debt. We also have a stock market bubble, as I mentioned. The total market cap to GDP today is 207%. Under Ronald Reagan, it was 40% of the economy, the market cap of equities. We had a lot of room to run in the stock market in 1981 that we don't have today. The labor force was booming as women plowed into the labor force. It started after World War II, accelerated in the 60s, and it went ballistic in the 70s and 80s. It went from 63% to 67%. It was the biggest jump in the past 45 years. That's not going to happen again. The national debt to GDP is now 123%. It was 31% under Ronald Reagan. And under Donald Trump, the CPI seems to be stuck. Well, he didn't take office yet, but under Joe Biden and the incoming Trump presidency, CPI is now 3%, and it's moving slightly higher, 3.5 on the core, 3.3 core PCE. It's around 3% in various metrics. Under Ronald Reagan, CPI came crashing down from 12% to 1%. A huge tax break, so to speak, for consumers. So the Economic Recovery Act under Ronald Reagan in 1981, it was passed in August of 81, brought about GDP growth in that year of 2.5%. The following year, even though everything fiscally was doing well, on the right track, GDP shrank by 1.8%. So for those who believe the election of Donald Trump is going to automatically result in a panacea, I'll take the other side of that. But for now, we're holding our nose and staying long. Nevertheless, a recession and perhaps even a bond market debacle remain very credible threats. Now, at Penta Portfolio Strategy, we remain myopically vigilant for when financial conditions begin to tighten, credit spreads widen to the point where my model elects them to be something that we need to take action. The copper-gold ratio is key, and the break-even spreads begin to cascade lower. Those are all part of my model, 20-point model. When a recession or money market freeze is about to occur, we will sprint for right through that narrow emergency exit and head into cash, shorts, T-bills, maybe even the U.S. dollar tends to do well in these conditions. And when you have a globally synchronized crisis. Now, most investors will continue to buy and hold stocks like they always do because they don't have a model, they don't have a process. But what they usually do is panic near the bottom. And I don't think that's going to be different this time around. I think it's going to be especially true since so much of the money that is in the market is just on autopilot. It just goes into target date funds and passive investment funds that just try to mirror the averages. And after that crisis is over, after they panic, that is when those who have the dry powder should be able to pick up shares at a much safer and more reasonable valuation. Now, I'm not claiming that I can pick the day that the stock market tops. It will be, you know, maybe, before that or after that. But the key is that this model was built to identify when we have a serious issue, not some random hiccup in price action, not some, you know, random volatility. When we have a recession, when we have a credit crisis, when the money markets will freeze, we will take action. And that means we can protect and even profit from the eventual, inevitable grand reconciliation of asset prices. And that, I will humbly submit, is the most intelligent and prudent strategy to take.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of the Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you are not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.